has changed a lot. Back in 50 years ago, there were 6% of African Americans were even allowed to vote in Mississippi. Today, Mississippi has more African American elected officials than any other state. So Mississippi has come a long ways, but we have to also be honest and say it still has a long ways to go.
Well, and David, as you come up from Mississippi back to New York and New Jersey, where you live, do you feel progress has been made after the deaths of your brother and so many others?
Well, I think Mississippi reflects the rest of the country. There is a lot of there has been a lot of progress made all around the country. The issues now are more subtle, a different mode of restriction, and I look at the intent. When people do something, the people who murdered my brother committed the worst crime, but they also assassinated the Constitution. That's how I felt about it. And when you, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, and both parties have done it, you're assassinating the Constitution.
I want to thank David Goodman, Ari Berman, Jerry Mitchell. Thanks so much for being with us. That does it for our show. I'll be speaking tonight in Chicago at the Crown Plaza Hotel, Conference Center, Chicago O'Hare Airport area. Check our website at democracynow.org. And we have two job openings at Democracy Now! Check democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Welcome back to Renee Feltz.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with host Joanne Hardesty. Today's guest is Latoya Harris, whose 9-year-old daughter was arrested in her home, placed in handcuffs, and hauled down to police headquarters to be fingerprinted and photographed. But first, veterans and their allies will hold a picket line and news conference opposing the renewed U.S. military intervention in Iraq tomorrow, Friday, June 27th, from 11 a.m. till noon at Portland's Federal Building at Southwest 3rd and Madison. The event is organized by Veterans for Peace, Chapter 72. The message is, no more war, no more dead and wounded.
Tune in to Between the Covers every Thursday at 11 a.m. to hear interviews with locally and nationally known authors from both fiction and nonfiction. Between the Covers, only on KBOO Portland.
Tune in Saturday, June 28th for a live broadcast from Good in the Hood. KBOO will broadcast the entertainment from Lilith's Albina Park from 2 to 7 p.m. Tune in to hear what's good in the hood Saturday, June 28th from 2 to 7 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Hi, I'm Celeste Carey.
And I'm Cecil Prescott.
Join us this coming Monday for more talk radio, when our guest will be Shana Redmond, author of Anthem, Social Movements and the Sound of Solidarity in the African Diaspora.
We'll talk about how black music has contributed to the growth and mobilization of the modern black citizen.
That's more talk radio Monday, June 30th at 8 a.m. right here on KBOO Portland.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and it's a pleasure to be with you today. I have here in the studio with me Latoya Harris, a mom, a community member, who has a really heartbreaking story about an experience her 9-year-old daughter had with Portland Police. And you may have, you know, seen some of the newspaper articles or some of the TV interviews, but I wanted to bring Latoya here because I think anybody that's a mother, anybody that's a father, anybody with conscience should be concerned about this story. So welcome, Latoya, to the studio.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And let's just jump right in. So let's talk about the day that, did you get a call from the Boys and Girls Club that your daughter was involved in an altercation? No?
No.
What happened?
No, I didn't.
If you could get a little bit closer to the mic.
Excuse me. Okay, so yes. No, I didn't get a call.
You didn't get a call. What happened?
No. My daughter came home and she was upset, said that she got into a fight and she was suspended from the Boys and Girls Club. And she told me she was fighting.
Right.
So I told her, you know, you shouldn't do that. And now it's time for you to go to your aunt's house and help her move.
Right.
Okay. You're on punishment.
Right.
Okay. About 6 days after that is when the police showed up to arrest her.
Well, now, when the police showed up at your house, tell me what they rang your bell.
My daughter had just came in from the sprinkler at our neighborhood park. So she was still damp. And they came in and questioned her. They came on our front porch and they questioned her. And it was aggressive questioning.
Now, did they ask you if they, it was okay for them to talk to your daughter?
Yeah, they did. And I was trying to cooperate with the police. So I told her, tell them what happened.
Right.
But before she could, they kept asking her the same set of questions. Tell us what really happened. Did you bash your head into the wall? You know, they were just aggressively questioning her. And she was scared. And so I was trying to cut the interview short.
Right.
But they were having none of that. They told me they would just take her to jail if I didn't. And I said, no, you're joking. When I said you're joking is when the officer pulled out the handcuffs, told her to put her hands behind her back, and perp walked my daughter 2 feet to the cop car in handcuffs, okay?
Right.
And took her downtown to Central Precinct.
Now, we left out a critical detail because you said your daughter had just come back from the sprinkler, right?
Yes.
And so how was she dressed?
She was still in her blue and white bathing suit and a pink Velcro wraparound towel and flip-flops. They wouldn't let her change. They didn't want me to go with her. They did offer to bring her back. But in my mind, they shouldn't have took her in the first place.
Right.
So
now they didn't let you go with her.
No.
I understand that the officer told you to take the bus.
Yeah. Well, he knew. I told him I didn't have a car. They knew I didn't have transportation.
Okay.
So they knew I had to take the bus.
And they offered to bring her back.
Yeah.
When?
They didn't exactly specify when. That's another thing. They weren't clear on when they would bring her back.
Right.
So I wasn't taking any chances at that point. I was on the first bus heading downtown, which took a while. And when I got my daughter from back there.
When you got there, where was she?
She was in a holding cell. I had to wait out front for them to release her. And
so had they fingerprinted her, taken her picture?
Mugshot. Yeah, and then they placed her in a holding cell for me, you know, to come get her. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little
choked
up.
Okay, I know this is a hard story to tell.
Yeah.
It's a hard story to hear.
Yeah.
But the public needs to know,
I know. Yes,
that
they do.
These are the people that are supposed to protect and serve us. So,
yeah.
So it just in your own pace, it's fine.
I just didn't get the same girl.
You didn't get the same girl back?
No.
What was she like before?
Outgoing, spunky, sassy, very smart, always had to be at the park, just an outside child, always had to, you know, she was just more happy, more innocent. She played with dolls. She watched cartoons.
Right.
Like a 9-year-old is supposed to.
Right.
I didn't get that 9-year-old back. I got an angry, withdrawn, sad, didn't even want to go outside, didn't associate with none of her friends. I got a completely different child back. And for a whole year, the police department told me and my daughter they did nothing wrong. But I'm watching my daughter deteriorate.
Right.
So I know it's wrong.
Right.
I know that if I didn't speak out, it would have happened again.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
I just know that.
And so it wasn't until you spoke out publicly that the community knew that this had taken place. Because it was a whole year.
Yes.
And so you did what the public is supposed to do when they when something happens with the police. You went to what's called the Independent Police Review Office and you filed a complaint.
Yeah.
And tell us about that process.
I was very disappointed. I was pleased with the investigator, but I was very disappointed with the outcome. They only decided to give one of the officers an SIO, which is a servant improvement opportunity. But the other officer put the handcuffs on my daughter and walked her to the cop car. As far as I'm concerned, both officers deserved more of a stiffer penalty than that.
And so I think what I heard from the IPR director was the officers did nothing wrong because there is no policy that prohibits them from handcuffing a 9-year-old child and taking them to jail. I have to say, when I heard that, I thought the idiots are in charge of the asylum. Because what adult would think that you need a written policy to tell you that it is not okay to handcuff a 9-year-old child?
Yeah.
And so you got a very angry young girl back. And you put her in counseling.
Yeah, she's been in counseling for a year since this whole thing has happened. Thank God that she's been blessed with a very wonderful counselor who's helped her through this process, because I couldn't do it on my own. And she's beginning to come around now. She's being more social. She's now starting to come back. I don't think she'll ever gain that innocence she lost that day back. But it's good to see some of her returning, and that makes me very happy.
And she's 9 years old, so what grade is she in?
Oh, no, she's 10 now.
She's 10 now.
Yeah, she's in the fifth grade.
She's in the fifth grade.
Yeah.
So there was a fourth grader.
Yeah.
But I think, as you said, the fight happened 6 days before the police showed up.
Yeah.
So why did the police show up at your house for a childhood interaction?
The mother wanted my daughter. The mother of the girl my daughter got into the fight with wanted my daughter arrested.
The mother?
Yes, of the other girl.
Right. So she called the police?
Yes.
And did she call them the day of the incident?
Yes, 3 hours after the fact.
So she called them 3 hours after the incident took place, and it took the police 6 days to show up at your door?
No, they did show up that day, I sent my daughter to be a mover for my sister.
So she wasn't home.
No.
So they didn't get a chance to talk to her that day.
But I think they would have arrested her that day. Now that I'm glad she wasn't there, because they probably would have arrested her that day.
Right.
Yeah.
So what else do we need to know about the impact this has had on your daughter?
I'm sorry,
Mom. I'm asking you hard questions. And any mom, any mom would be having the emotions that you're having right now. So you take your time. Why don't I go to the phone line, give you a chance to regroup, and see what our callers are saying, okay?
Yeah.
It's going to be okay. We are here with you. I am talking to LaToya Harris. She had the unfortunate experience of having Portland police officers come to her house and arrest her 9-year-old daughter. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. We'll go into the phone line. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Yeah, good morning, Joanne. It's Brian.
Oh, hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, except I'm mad. But other than that,
absolutely.
I'm good.
Absolutely. It's like I think I conserve a large amount of my day to be angry. and you guys aren't making me angry. It's just, you know, this absurdity, and I am so sorry that this has happened to you. I really am, and there's nothing else I can say about it. But I really need to, you know, and I think the ramifications of this will unfortunately be with your daughter throughout her entire life. She's at an incredibly impressionable age.
That's right. Well, and you can believe that she will never, ever trust a police officer again in her life.
Or, you know, anybody in authority.
Right.
You know, and there's this whole stigma about uniforms and everything else.
Right.
You know, that people who've been abused by people in any uniform. I mean, this is gonna be part of her life for a long time, and I'm not being negative to you.
No,
you're
right.
But
I don't sound like I'm torturing you.
No, LaToya knows this.
I know. Yeah.
But you know, I really need to point this out, and you know, for the average person, you know, it's on the Huffington Post. That's about as average as I can get. you know.
This story has gone national. I'm sorry. LaToya was looking at me like, what?
your story's not been on the Huffington Post that I know of. But the bottom line is like this, is the Huffington Post has been airing all this stuff a lot lately about the militarization of the police.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that militarization is, you know, they are getting equipment that's left over from Iraq and Afghanistan, that's going to be left over from Afghanistan.
Right.
And they're using it in their daily practices.
Yes.
And you know, the bottom line goes, you know, I mean, we've seen the police beat homeless people up. We've
yes.
seen them, you know, attack teenagers for wearing a hoodie, et cetera, et cetera.
Kill teenagers for wearing, young men for wearing a hoodie, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, this is what this expenditure is going for.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the bottom line goes that we need to use money that we're spending on all this equipment. You know, we're going to have to use the money for lawsuits that LaToya is going to bring and other families are going to bring against the police department. And the thing is, you know, the abuse is not going to stop with, you know, minority families. It's going
right.
to go up the line.
Right.
And, you know, it's going to go from the black community into the white community.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're all going to be sitting there going, we're all paying for it.
Right.
Every one of us. It's not just that we're becoming a police state. It's we're eating our tax. We're spending our tax money, you know, to do things like this.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that needs to be harped on incredibly. And, you know, as you've pointed out, Joanne, I mean, we really need to look at litigation and in the fact that the police do not need body armor to deal with a 9-year-old kid.
Exactly.
And arresting a 9-year-old kid, I seriously, you know, I came up as a foster kid
mm-hmm.
in Florida. And I never heard of anybody under 15 getting arrested when I was young.
Me either.
Me neither.
Right. That,
yeah.
Right.
And
you
I
would
mean,
think
you know,
that would be the minimum.
Like,
yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, it was like, do everything you can not to. And I'm talking about growing up in Florida.
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
I mean, one of the most, you know, militant states in the country, you know, as far as the police go. But, I mean, you know, I won't go on and on, but, you know, I think this is not just a symptom, but this is a condition that if we accept this, you know, we are actually accepting our own demise socially.
Yeah.
And I think more needs to be told about how this child will be affected in the long term. And LaToya,
yes,
hang in there, and God bless you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your call, Brian. Really appreciate it.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
One of the things that I want to do, because, you know, I want to make sure that the public knows that we are talking about Officer David McCarthy and Officer Matthew Husbeck. And I understand that these two officers are assigned to New Columbia, and they are supposedly the community police officers at New Columbia.
Yeah.
These police officers should be reassigned and should never, ever, ever work with children again. I have had police tell me that the children love these officers. They just run up when this officer show up. But clearly these officers do not have the political, they don't have the mental maturity
Mm-mm.
to be working with children.
No.
And so again, I am talking about Officer David McCarthy and Officer Matthew Husbeck.
Right.
You need to know the names of the officers that abuse their power
yes.
in our community.
Yeah.
And it is my hope that when people see these two officers around New Columbia, that you bring your cell phones and you take pictures and you watch them
mm-hmm.
until they have been reassigned to a place where they will never, ever, ever be working with children again. And let me also say, and I'm saying this, LaToya, not you,
mm-hmm.
I have no doubt in my mind
Mm-hmm.
that if your daughter was a white 9-year-old girl,
mm-hmm.
that would have never
no.
happened to
no.
her.
No, it would have never.
And I need to put that out there because
mm-hmm.
it's important for the public to understand. when we start criminalizing children, that's why our jails are so full with people of color.
Right.
These officers, David McCarthy and Matthew Husbeck, please, they have no right dealing with children at all. And the public doesn't even know the whole story yet. So I'm going to take a couple of more calls, and then we're going to tell you, we're going to tell the public how these officers now are targeting you for excessive enforcement. But we're going to go back to the phone first. Hello, Leslie. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Could you spell those officers' names?
I'd be happy to. Again, it is David McCarthy, McCarthy, and Officer Matthew Husbeck, spelled Husbeck. They are assigned to New Columbia, and I hope people will call the mayor's office this morning and tell the mayor that he needs to make the police chief move these two men. They need to go through some retraining so they understand what a criminal looks like, and they need to be removed from any activity that is associated with children in our community.
Frankly, I don't think they deserve to be on a police force. LaToya, are you instituting a lawsuit?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Well, and let me...
How can I contribute? I mean, are you, have you set up a fund? Because I would love to send you some money.
You know what? We have not done that yet, but LaToya does need help.
I do.
And she does need to set up a fund. So we will. I will ask my engineer to get your contact information, and then once we figure out how to set that fund up, we will make that information available on KBO, on my Voices from the Edge website, and on my Facebook page. I think that is a great idea because, you know, only poor people are targeted by the police because they know we don't have the resources to go out and hire an attorney.
That's right. They thought they could get away with this because they thought that I was too poor and too, I don't want to say stupid or uneducated to fight for my daughter's rights.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what, yeah. So I thank you very much for your concern and your willingness to help.
Thank you.
All the best to you.
You too. Don't hang up. Talk to my fabulous engineer over there. Okay? And so let's tell the folks the rest of this story because we got them all riled up now. We might as well tell them the rest of the story.
Which
and so,
part?
Part two.
Okay,
right?
Yes. So right now, I am currently facing eviction from New Columbia because my son and his girlfriend came to visit me and they had got into a dispute. It wasn't a real physical dispute or anything, but yet these officers showed up on the scene. The same two officers, Husbeck and McCarthy, without being called, 9:30 at night, they swoop up in my backyard. They also had my back entrance blocked off, and their Sergeant McDaniels, who in 2012 pepper sprayed a woman in her mouth during Occupy Portland.
Yes, yes, yes.
Was parked out in the front of my home. And I asked him very politely, I said, sir, can I please just get two other officers? I know you guys have a job to do.
Right.
I just need two other officers here. This is upsetting my daughter, who was very upset.
Right. Just imagine, so they show up.
Yeah.
Your daughter's home.
Yeah.
These are the same two big white men who manhandled her and arrested her.
Yes, she's
so they're
hysterical.
Back at your door, right?
Yes.
So she's hysterical.
Yes.
You asked the sergeant in charge, can you send me other officers because of the experience we've had with these two?
Yes.
And they said no.
He said right there with my daughter on the left of me now.
Right.
He said, I will never forget this. He said, I think it was the right thing for them to arrest your daughter. And I think that they did the right thing. And I backed them up on it. Right there while my daughter's to the left of me.
Right.
Now, I understand you have your personal opinion.
Right.
When you're in uniform, though, it's not about that.
It's not
you're
a personal
You're there to do a job.
Right.
Exactly. You're supposed to be about your job, not a personal opinion.
Right.
And even if he wanted to state that, he could have pulled me to the side.
That's right.
And not have said that in front of my daughter, who's already hysterical.
Right.
He just made her even more break down. She couldn't believe that he said that.
Right.
And she just ran in the house and started crying even more. And I filed the independent police review, a complaint about that night. And about 4 days later, I look on my door and there's a 24-hour eviction notice. on my door. So I have to go to trial.
And you just went to court this week.
Yes.
And so there was an opportunity for the housing authority to drop this.
Yeah. And they wouldn't.
And they wouldn't even talk to you about it.
No, they wouldn't even discuss the matter.
But you have a certified letter, thank you, from your...
my son's girlfriend.
From your
contradicting everything, because that was a biased report.
Right.
You know, I mean, we've had personal experiences. I've embarrassed these officers. So, of course, they're going to be some feeling some kind of way about this. It biased it. It was full of embellishments. They lied on my son. They said he punched his girlfriend. My son is not a batterer, you know. They said I interfered and yelled at them. I didn't do no such thing. I didn't even yell when they arrested my daughter, you know.
Right.
I'm the type of mom, I have to remain calm because it keeps her calm. If I had panicked and got beside myself, it would have made her even more down, you know. So I was trying to remain cool.
Mm-hmm.
I did not interfere. I respect good officers.
Right.
Just not these officers.
Yes. And so you have a date? Did they give you a date
to go
back to court?
Not yet.
Not yet.
No.
Okay. And so, but you are now facing eviction because these same two officers, David McCarthy and Matthew Husbeck, trumped up charges in front of your house. And it sounds like they were actually watching your house.
It do.
Because they showed up without being called, right?
Yeah.
So there wasn't a community complaint. They just happened to be there when your son and his girlfriend was having their argument.
That wasn't even the worst. 9:30 at night. The girlfriend gave her statement for 30 minutes.
Right.
And then she left. Do you know these officers had my home blocked off for almost 2 hours?
Whoa.
Yes. 2 hours. They Sergeant
McDaniel. Because of course the goal is to have the community see that somehow you're in trouble, right?
Yes. Sergeant McDaniels had my front entrance blocked off, and the other two, McCarthy and Haspect, had my back entrance blocked off for 2 hours. And all they were telling me was to go back inside the house. They didn't take out statements. They were so rude. Okay.
Did they arrest your son?
No, they didn't even ask where he was or anything.
So they didn't arrest your son.
No.
There was no citation.
No.
The girlfriend was able to leave. But somehow now you are facing eviction because of the narrative that these officers put on their report. Do you have a copy of the police report?
No, I didn't think to bring it, but...
But you do have a copy.
Yes,
okay,
I
good.
Do.
I'm glad you got a copy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting very smart when it comes to cops. You know what to ask for now.
I don't trust them at all.
We're going to go back to the phone line. I'm sorry.
Rose.
Hello, Rose. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rose.
Well, in interest of community information, I guess, or a broadened perspective on this, I haven't heard anything about actually what would cause, what level of altercation at the Boys and Girls Club would cause them to ban this 9-year-old girl from the club.
Well, it was just for a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let me tell you about the fight. The fight lasted all of 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
The staff at the Boys and Girls Club saw it happening, stepped in immediately, told both girls to knock it off, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got punishment from the club, and then that was the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a 30-second altercation.
Yes.
So what other info do you need?
Oh, I wondered how often they ban children from the club. How often they
Because they have a zero-tolerance policy.
For violence.
So, for
right?
violence.
Right.
So, they of course, you know, they suspend children for a week, you know. And if it's more serious, then, I mean, they would expel a child. But for them, it wasn't as serious. It was only a week suspension.
I used the word expel. Early.
Oh, no, only if it was a more serious thing, like if a child kept being a behavior problem, then they might expel. If the child was causing a danger to other children consistently, then they might expel that child from the center. But if that child just got into one altercation, then they would, and they know my daughter was not a behavior problem. Neither was the other girl that she got into a fight with, by the way. Both girls were educated, smart kids who just made a bad decision.
I want to know the mother's name of the white mother who thought that calling the police to arrest a 9-year-old girl was the right thing to do.
Her name is Casey Joe.
Casey Joe.
And the thing is, we never knew each other personally.
Right.
But we've seen each other, you know, at our children's school. Yeah. And the thing was, if she felt this strongly, we could have had an old-fashioned sit-down like two mothers are supposed to when our children fight.
Yes.
And I would have made my daughter apologize to her child as well as the mother for right. that kind of conduct. Yeah. I'm not proud of my daughter for fighting. That's unacceptable. But what was even more unacceptable was the extreme that police officers went to arrest her
yes.
and treat her like she is a hardened criminal.
Right.
You should never treat children that way. It has detrimental consequences on their psyche, their emotions. I lived it. I've seen it. I know. And that's why I want an ordinance, a law, a policy, something that will protect children from this mistreatment.
You know what? I can see us going to the state legislature in 2015 and actually passing a law statewide mm-hmm. to make sure that not just Portland police, but any police officer. I mean, if Portland police aren't smart enough to know you don't arrest a 9-year-old,
mm-hmm.
then we need a state law to make sure that no law enforcement officer thinks that's a good thing to do.
Yes.
Right? I'm sorry. I forgot we have a caller. Yes. Any other questions?
Well, I just have a comment. It just seems that, well, I'm just curious about the lack of conflict resolution here
mm-hmm.
and the lack of skills in conflict resolution when a 9-year-old child attacks another physically to the extent that they have to be. Wait a minute.
You got the story wrong. You got the story wrong. There was no attack that was so severe that anything was necessary. Did you not hear that it was a 30-second altercation?
No, I haven't. Altercation? I'm just saying that, well, then obviously the Boys and Girls Club was at fault for...
Well, no, the Boys and Girls Club did just what they were supposed to do. They stepped in.
They examined the children. I just want to make you know, excuse me, Miss, excuse me.
It's okay. Go ahead.
I want to say they examined
well,
both
using,
children.
Let's take away the word attack, but let's say using physical violence against each other.
I agree, it's wrong.
Is an appropriate way to resolve their differences.
You're right.
And that this is a thing that they chose to do.
Right.
But they didn't, you know, what? How many choices do they have in their toolbox, the kids have in their toolbox to resolve things?
Well,
and I don't think things like this happen on the first instance of someone displaying that
you're
kind
wrong.
Of behavior.
You're wrong. This did happen on a first incident.
Yes.
See, I mean, I understand
the
that
first fight this child has ever
this
been
child
in.
Has never been in trouble. This
oh,
child
man.
Is an honor student.
Yes.
This child is bright. She's articulate.
Mm-hmm.
She's a ideal 9-year-old child. I don't know of any 9-year-old child that doesn't get into a fight at one time or another.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, what do the adults do mm-hmm. to make sure that they learn?
I don't know many 9-year-old children that get in physical fights.
Are you kidding me?
To the level that they would be suspended.
What there I'm was no here. Level. Can I get that through
it's
your head?
It's a zero tolerance policy,
right?
Which means no violence.
I guess I question the siding of the way you're telling the story.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Okay,
okay.
I'm sorry.
But for
I
a
can
family
clarify
to be involved twice with the police over conflicts.
Okay,
and
ma'am.
The extent that the mother is using this as an opportunity to probably sue the state.
Ma'am,
no.
You are wrong. I'm going to cut you off because you can't even hear the story that I'm telling you. I will say this once again for the people like you who are listening to this program. This is a 9-year-old child. Nothing a 9-year-old child does, if they murder somebody, then maybe mm-hmm. it would be appropriate for the police to take them into custody. But a 9-year-old child that gets into a 9-year-old child-like scuffle in the Boys and Girls Club that's broken up in 30 seconds does not deserve in any shape or form to be handcuffed, walked to the car,
mm-hmm.
taken to the taken to jail, fingerprinted, picture taken, and then put into a holding cell. And so I don't know what world you live in, but the world I live in, that is not appropriate. And I don't care what color the child is, it's not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that if that was a white child, these officers would not have done that. And so I am done with my rant. Forgive me. Where were we? Okay. Moving forward. And, you know, quite frankly, we have a lot of people in the community that feels just like don't believe that the police ever do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. The police must have had a good reason for arresting a 9-year-old child in her bathing suit at her home. Mm-hmm. Well, if there's a good one, please call me at 503-231-8187 and tell me what reason you think would be appropriate to arrest the 9-year-old child in their in their bathing suit. I'm going to go back to the phone line. Good morning. Hello. Hello, John. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome.
Joanne?
Yes.
This is Anne. Listen, I have two words for Rose, your last caller.
Okay.
The words are just wait.
Just wait, huh?
She's going to encounter the police state sooner rather than later.
This is true.
And that's going to turn her head around.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's very true. I think Occupy opened up a lot of people's mind to police brutality who thought, oh, they're just here to protect and serve.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to tell LaToya, first of all, I'm so sorry, and I admire her so much for her strength and the way she's handling this. I wanted to just tell her two things. One, there's a national magazine called The Week that covered this story. And she might want to look into that and see the. It was, you know, they
what's
have
it called? The Week?
Articles.
The Week?
It's called The Week.
Okay,
yeah,
we'll look it up.
W-E-E-K.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you, Anne.
Oh, you're welcome. And Harry Belafonte has done work around this. He saw a picture of a 5-year-old black girl being arrested at her school. If you can believe this, for throwing a tantrum, and she was being handcuffed. And he got into activism about this. So you might also want to see if he's got a website and maybe share your story there.
Okay.
Because I won't let you go because you have a lot of more things to say. But I just want to say, go big with this, because this is something that people need to hear. And just don't worry about those people like Rose that are going to ask stupid questions. until they've encountered this, they have no idea. So.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you.
Appreciate your call. And, you know, as a community, I've always been worried about having police officers in the school because what we know is that juvenile behavior then turns into criminal behavior when police officers are present.
Yes, it does.
And so I question school resource officers and why we are on this track to somehow. I think what we're trying to do is make police relevant. We live in a city where we had 10 murders last year. Mm-hmm. We've got 1,000 police officers, and we don't need that many people walking around looking like they're headed to war.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're trying to figure out how to use police as mental health providers, which is the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard of. We're trying to use police as in schools, as disciplinarians in schools. And of course, you know, we got the gang enforcement team that just shows up whenever black people are congregated with more than 5 or 6 people in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a city, we must rethink what role we want police to play. And clearly, we don't want them arresting. I mean, I think that's a no-brainer. I don't know why we need a policy that says you shouldn't be arresting 9-year-old children for any reason unless they commit murder. Now, if they commit murder, you know, there's probably a reason to take them into custody.
Yeah.
But at 9, I still don't think you'd be handcuffing them.
Yeah, with kids, you have to handle them when you know, they're kids, the special circumstances when they're kids.
Right.
Yes,
it's absolutely true. We have lots of callers lined up. I think we have fired up the masses.
What?
Let's go back to the phone line. Hello, Sandy. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. Thank you. So coincidentally, I happen to be in the middle of reading The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander.
Great book.
Well, while I was reading it, the first chapter, the history is just phenomenal.
Yes, it is.
But you know, understanding where this kind of
mindset.
Well, no, this kind of action mindset is one thing. Actually, doing something.
Right.
This is all part of how many people are in jail right now, and mm-hmm. the disproportionate yes. amount of them being people of color, and it focuses a lot on the drug war because that's the majority, the vast majority of prisoners, but it also focuses on this absurd way that the police are being trained to behave
yes.
and to racially profile mm-hmm. without using the words racially profiling.
Yes.
And I've been reading the rest of the book, and I'm kind of, okay, these are interesting details, but this is going around all the time, and I know all this stuff. And then, ho-hum.
Yeah.
And then I hear your program, and when it's here at home and you see this ridiculous overaction. And they talk a lot in the book. I'm sure you've read it, but they talk a lot. Not everybody listening has, and I really want to recommend them that they take a good look at it. The SWAT team thing, I mean, hearing how they came dressed to arrest a nine-year-old, this absurd stuff that's going on. I just had to call and say how that blew me away, and I mean, to hear you talking about it right now while I'm reading that book.
Well, thank you so much for your call.
Yeah. Thank you.
The great thing about Michelle Alexander's book, like you said, there's really not any new information in it.
Mm-hmm.
But the compelling thing about her book is how she was able to connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we think, oh, well, this is isolated and this is isolated.
No.
And when you know that police decide who the criminals are,
mm-hmm.
when police decide who gang members are,
mm-hmm.
when police develop the narrative and then they go out and target those communities, the general public, if you're not the one being targeted, you say, well, the police are doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, the police are not doing their job when we know that the gang enforcement unit stops 35% of their stops are African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
The city of Portland has 6% African American population.
Yeah.
And so, and they get it wrong because
yeah.
the people they stop, they're not arresting them. They don't have any paraphernalia. They don't have any weapons, right?
Mm-hmm.
They get it wrong over and over and over again, and no one is holding them accountable.
No, and it's at the expense of the community, at the expense of us.
At the expense of us. But if anybody out there listening would like to call Mayor Charlie Harrells, who is our police commissioner, his number is 503-823-4120. Again, Charlie Harrells is the police commissioner. The buck stops with him.
I would like to say something about Mayor Harrells, because I don't feel that he has spoke up enough about this matter.
He has said nothing.
Not a word.
Nothing.
And he is the mayor.
Right.
So I was looking for him to show these officers, the department, some guidance
right.
or at least implement
right.
some kind of law. He got that power.
Right.
Haven't heard a word.
Well, you know, they...
But
go ahead.
He can interfere in my daughter's tort claim to make sure she received the least amount possible. Okay.
Oh, right. Explain that.
Which, okay, the city, I filed a tort claim, and I want everybody to know this. I only had my attorney file that tort claim after the IPR's decision, because
right.
I was really counting on the IPR to discipline these officers.
Right.
Okay. Once that didn't happen, then I felt like, okay, now let's just go to the next step.
Right.
Okay, the city auditor's office went to the mayor's office to try to negotiate a sum.
Right.
The sum that they first proposed was $4,000 to $5,000. Okay.
Right.
Of course, I said no.
Right.
She talked to somebody at the mayor's office, and then they told her just keep it at $1,000. That's all. That's
so
all the
Mayor
pain and
Charlie.
Suffering.
Wait. So Mayor Charlie Hale's office.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking to the city negotiator.
Yes.
About your tort claim.
Yes.
They originally come to you with a proposal around $4,000 or $5,000
mm-hmm.
to just make you go away.
Mm-hmm.
And you say no. That's not going to be sufficient
mm-hmm.
for the harm that's been caused my daughter.
Yeah, the pain and suffering.
So you tell me that they then go to the mayor's office and talk to the mayor and
yes.
then come back and say that the mayor said $1,000 is the maximum?
Yes.
Well.
The mayor's office only approved $1,000. So let me just say, an African-American 9-year-old girl's pain and suffering to the mayor's office is only worth $1,000.
Well, I think it's appalling that they started at $5,000.
They tried to buy us off cheap.
Right. Because, again, when you're talking poor people or people of color, they think that they can, like, just do whatever they want to do. I'm appalled to hear that the mayor came back and suggested that
one of his liaisons did.
Well, they work for the mayor. Exactly. The buck stops with him.
Yeah.
And so if someone representing the mayor's office told you that the mayor's has said, we will keep this to $1,000, that's pretty appalling.
Yeah.
I'm going to help you find a lawyer. We can go back to the phone line. I'm sorry? I'm having a little bit of trouble with my mic. One more time.
Hi. This is Garrett. Do you hear me?
Welcome.
Hi. I had my own little bit of an incident, not just with police, but with the school district in Malala.
Right.
And this just kind of reminds me of the whole attitude that, you know, if you're not one of them, you don't matter.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, I'm white, and it's a mostly white community there, but my family was pagan. And so I was physically tortured on the school bus every day on the way to and from school.
Wow.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
And this is when I was nine also. And I actually, like, I blacked out the memories after a certain amount of time. Like, I'd cry on the walk home, which I had a quarter mile driveway. By the time I got home, I forgot what happened. And I didn't even remember this until just actually 5 or 6 years ago when my mom asked me if I remembered it. And, like, holy crap, I do.
Michael, you blacked it out.
Yeah.
Wow.
And but then other things started to make sense, because I remember being pulled into that principal's office and him telling me that I was a bad kid and that I was doing something wrong and my devil-worshipping family brought this on me. And I, at the time that I was in his office, did not know what he was talking about.
Wow.
But I do also remember my mom going into the police station to try to ask that I be protected somehow, that the school actually be forced to stop this torture from occurring.
Right.
And they told her, we know about you devil worshippers. You're lucky I don't arrest you and take your kid from you right now.
Whoa.
You see?
Wow.
Who so made sorry them the about judge, that, jury, right? and executioner?
I am so sorry that happened. And what impact has it had on you? This was at nine. What kind of impact did that have?
It seriously affected my ability to have relationships and screwed it up for a long time. I only got over that maybe a couple of years ago. But there are all kinds of things throughout my whole life. But the big thing is I can't ever trust anyone who has any kind of authority, and I can't handle anyone being able to make decisions on my behalf, because I know, for one, they don't trust, they don't understand me.
Right.
And even when they think that they're making, like, decisions that would be good for them, that's not necessarily what's good for me.
Right.
Because on top of that, I'm an Aspie, so these things affect me differently. There's a different flavor to trauma.
It is.
A different flavor to post-traumatic stress.
Right.
But because that guy told me that I was a bad kid, all the time growing up after that, I just knew I was a bad kid, and other people would know I was a bad kid, even though I didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
I was always checked for drugs at school. They thought I was a drug dealer.
Wow.
That's so wrong.
I dropped out of high school and got into drugs. Guess why?
Right.
I understand this now, looking back on it, and it was only pot. I never got into anything harder than that, but, you know, I just knew I was a bad kid, and so I thought, you know, might as well go ahead.
I'm a bad kid. I might as well go ahead and do bad things, right? Thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it. You have a very good day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Again, the number to call is 503-231-8187. If you're interested in letting the police commissioner, Mayor Charlie Harrells, know about your desires for these two officers to find someplace else to work, then I would encourage you to give them a call at 503-823-4120. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Bill. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was listening to the conversation in the early part, mm-hmm. and I almost get a sense that it goes back to that attitude that somehow black people who stand up for themselves need to be taught a lesson, mm-hmm. which is kind of rooted in this hidden racist attitude for the most part, because that's mm-hmm. all I can think about. Like, somehow, if you're African-American and you stand up for yourself, you deserve to be punished,
yes.
or somehow we're all criminals. But yes. my point is like, I think about Kendra James being someone's child.
Yes.
I think about James Perez being someone's child.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I think about all of these things, and I look at it like connecting the dots in this escalation, mm-hmm. that somehow, at what point do we really need to understand that protecting our children
yes.
as a whole is important, and assuring that they have rights and not having to be victimized by their community and then victimized by the very people who are there to police their community. But that's my thought today, and I just wish you the best of luck as a mother and mainly as a citizen trying to raise a productive child in an environment that's difficult at best.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your call.
Very well said, too.
And if you didn't join us earlier, the officers that we're talking about is Officer David McCarthy and Officer Matthew Husbeck. Apparently, they are supposedly community police officers at New Columbia, but we don't think they should ever, ever, ever mm-hmm. be able to work with children again in life.
No.
If they don't have the decision-making ability, if they don't have the verbal skills to be able to get information they need from a 9-year-old mm-hmm. and without arresting them and sending her through that experience, they have no right to be working with children.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you call the mayor at 503-823-4120 and tell him that these officers, maybe they need to go work in the jail. Maybe mm-hmm. that would be a better place for them.
Because
then they could understand what real criminals are like
mm-hmm.
and not think. I'm fearful, quite frankly, of what they are doing to children in New Columbia every day. If they would arrest a 9-year-old, I think they have no decision-making ability at all.
No.
Back to the phone line. Hello, Edie. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. First of all, I want to thank you for staying with this issue and being so articulate and courageous. And second, I want to pass on my empathy, compassion, admiration, and encouragement to your guest and to the second-to-last speaker.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many things I could say. Yes, from my first-hand experience, I know you are too, and could, you know, go on for hours. but it just was a coincidence that, as you mentioned the word Michelle Alexander, who had written The New Jim Crow,
mm-hmm.
I was looking at some pictures my daughter had emailed me of her with a woman I think is Michelle Alexander at the Free Her rally that was Saturday, June 21st in Washington, D.C.,
uh-huh.
And put on by Families for Justice as Healing. And there was Ban the Box, there was Black and Pink, mm-hmm. There were Mothers in Charge. There were different groups who were there that I suggest that your listeners follow up on and understand some of the brutality that's going on. It's also a coincidence that my daughter's assistant Girl Scout leader helping me years ago had her father was wealthy through militarizing the police across the United States. And the reason is they're expecting eventually the middle class to rise up in rebellion, and they're just wondering why it's taken so long being so stupid.
I know, right? Right?
And as a result, you know, the same activities they used against MOVE, the
yes.
Black Panthers,
that's
the
right.
Green Scare,
mm-hmm.
the Earth Animal Liberation,
yes.
The environmentalists, those are the police, the journalists, the peace activists, the anarchists, the same approaches that they've been using to divide and conquer, to make us paranoid, to be despairing and cynical, to be either demanding someone be perfect, and if they're not perfect, we backstab them, or we give up with unrealistic expectations. And so they're just practicing with the poor and Black, disabled, mentally ill, of what they plan on doing with everyone else. And if that's too scary for the white middle class listeners because it's too scary, they don't want to think about it, then maybe they could go on the edges and read things like Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow. Or they could be looking at how Portland is one of the lead places in the world for children being abducted and used for sex crimes, babies and toddlers being raped on video for porn, etc. So wherever we want to move into our awakening and care enough to dare and act, please, please know, dear guest, that you and your beloved child are not alone, and that there are some of us who are working hard, putting our lives on the line, literally being shot or whatever it takes, to protect, to educate, to activate. And I encourage and I thank all of you for what you're doing.
Thank you so much. Could you give me the name of that national organization again, please?
Families for Justice as Healing.
Thank you so much.
Andrea James was a defense attorney, and she's trying to help some clients, and then it turns out that it was a real estate scam. So she was in prison herself.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I got to go. We're getting minus on minutes. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Appreciate you tuning in today. We're going to squeeze in this last caller. Hello, Harvey. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. Well, I think that we must look at the language we speak so as to create a level playing field. And, you know, like, for instance, I don't call it African Americans. I say Americans of African descent, because first they're American and then they're of African descent. The other way, it might sound like they're immigrants, and I feel that that Americans of African descent are actually suffering a verbal disadvantage. If you look in the dictionary under Black, it's everything evil. If you look in the dictionary under White, it's everything good. So white folks are getting like the good side of the synonym dictionary, and the African people of African American descent are getting the bad side. And also we have, you know, like we address people like people of color. Well, what does that make me? Does that make me a person of no color or of some color? It's, we have to look at the way we address each other. I believe we're speaking the language of war, and we're not really getting in touch with who we are, and we're living in a new age of quantum entanglement. I call it quantanglement, where we're actually there is the possibility.
So Barry, I'm going to have to cut you off because we are out of time. I need to give LaToya the last minute and a half that we have. So LaToya, I want to say to you that you are a brave mother. Mothers just naturally become brave when their kids are under attack.
Yes.
But you are a model for our community, for someone who stands up for what is right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have been reconfirmed today by the callers, by the offer of help. You need to know you are not alone. You've got a community that's got your back.
Mm-hmm.
And we are not going to allow this to be shoved under the rugs like so many other cases in the city of Portland. Yeah. And so if you've been under a rock and you didn't hear the program all the way through, you might not know that there's Officer David McCarthy and Officer Matthew Husbeck are supposedly community police officers at New Columbia. Mm-hmm. We sure want you to call the mayor at 503-823-4120 and tell him that these men should never in their life work with children again.
Mm-hmm.
How's your daughter doing?
Today she's better, but I just know that she still has some ways to go.
Mm-hmm.
And My daughter actually wants to have a mediation with the officer. She feels strong enough now to want to do that.
All right. Well, I think it's because she sees her mom standing up, mm-hmm. and she's saying, I can stand up too.
Yes.
I want to thank you so much for being here. I will bring you back for an update on where we are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Joanne Hardesty. This has been Voices from the Edge. See you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that Peter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland just 1 minute before 9 o'clock on your Thursday morning. Coming up in 1 hour, it'll be Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Join us at 10:15 today on Flashpoints, where today a report from Beirut, Lebanon on this week's suicide bombing. Also, the attorney for the family of Andy Lopez is appointed to the U.S. Justice Department's Civil Rights Commission for Northern California. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews Jo Walton about her novel, My Real Children, the story of an old woman who remembers two lives, two worlds, and two different versions of modern history. And at 11:30, the film show celebrates film archivists with a return visit from Mississippi Records co-founder Eric Isaacson. We also hear archivist Rick Prelinger talking about his new interactive film project, No More Road Trips. That's all coming up, but first, it's a special hour-long press watch featuring Teresa Mitchell with the news you're not supposed to know. That's coming up next on KBOO, KBOO Portland.
Listen to The Film Show, the fourth Thursday of each month at 11:30 a.m. The Film Show features news and interviews about the local and independent film scene. That's The Film Show, the fourth Thursday of the month at 11:30 a.m., only on KBOO Portland.
I'm Celeste Carey.
And I'm Cecil Prescott.
Join us this coming Monday for More Talk Radio, when our guest will be Shana Redmond, author of Anthem, Social Movements and the Sound of Solidarity in the African Diaspora.
We'll talk about how black music has contributed to the growth and mobilization of the modern black citizen.
That's More Talk Radio, Monday, June 30th at 8 a.m. right here on KBOO.